Having had an easy one, now we'll talk about prepaid cards. Joan? Joan, excuse me. This is agenda paper four for those of you in radio land.
Thank you. The Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the classification of the liability for a prepaid card issued by a bank without an expiry date and that are redeemable only for goods or services and merchants. At the last January meeting, the Interpretations Committee asked the staff to analyze other more complex arrangements, such as a customer loyalty program, to consider the basis for distinction with a prepaid card. To reflect the comment in this paper, we focused on the analysis of loyalty programs, which involve three parties and look similar to a prepaid card. In loyalty programs, issuers grant points to their customers as part of a sales transaction. There may be similar structures with a prepaid card. However, we think that loyalty programs should not be considered in this prepaid card issue, because they operate in a variety of ways, and so different applications may be required depending on the terms of the arrangement of the loyalty programs. And in many other loyalty programs where issuers retain the control over how points are redeemed, the issuer's obligation will be accounted for as a non-financial liability, because the issuer will have a primary responsibility to provide goods or services, and the issuer will have the ability to avoid delivering cash to settle the obligation. We think the obligation of the bank for a prepaid card is a financial liability, because as explained in the financial liability view in this paper, the bank's liability meets the definition of a financial liability. The bank does not have an unconditional right to avoid delivering cash to settle contractual obligation. And the result of outreach showed that the issuance of a prepaid card without expiry date is not widespread. Consequently, we kept the tentative agenda decision that the bank's obligation would meet the definition of a financial liability and deleted the paragraph about loyalty programs, which was included in the previous meeting. The questions to the Interpretation Committee are, do you agree with our analysis, and do you have any comments on the drafting of the tentative agenda decision?
Comments? Let Bob go first this time, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce. I agree with the staff's analysis that this is a financial liability. With respect to the derecognition aspects of it, as I mentioned at a previous meeting, I'm not a fan of it, but I accept that that was the consensus we reached at the previous meeting. I agree with the staff's analysis for this agenda decision to scope out loyalty programs, but I still think we have some problems with the scope. I think, you know, just looking at the title, we seem to be limiting this to banks, and this isn't limited to banks. There are a lot of other organizations that issue these prepaid stored value cards, including, I don't believe, the requester of this, the person who submitted this, or the organization that submitted it, they're not a bank. Within the, also looking at the scope, we list a number of features of this, and so that's kind of a scoping issue. I think a couple of things there. One, I think we need to get in that one of the features is that up front, the transaction was an exchange of cash for the prepaid stored value card. That would help with explaining how we're scoping out the loyalty programs. One observation where it indicates in B that it cannot be refunded, redeemed, or exchanged for cash. What we see in some jurisdictions, and this is my knowledge is primarily in some states in the U.S., There is a, by state law, there is an allowance for a cash redemption once the card is reduced down to a de minimis amount. I think California it's $10, Colorado is like $5. So I'm not sure that needs to be specifically addressed, but I just wanted to make that observation. The other is in the sections about C and D, where it's redeemable for goods or services only and redeemable only at selected merchants. One of the things we see is also is that the card issuer may be one of those merchants where so it's redeemable not only at other third-party merchants but also with the issuer. And let me give you an example. So think of a franchise organization where the corporate issues the card. So customer comes in, pays the $100 for the card, gets a card. Now the customer can then redeem the card either at corporate-owned franchises or third-party-owned franchises. I think those should be in the scope here. I mean, the corporate doesn't have the unilateral ability to restrict the customer to only coming to corporate stores. So they could go to a third-party store, and then the corporate would have to pay cash to the third-party franchise.
And you believe the wording right now would exclude?
Well, it's not clear because it says redeemable only at selected merchants. And I agree, merchants is generic here. I think some people might interpret it as being those only third-party.
Hmm. I would have thought we try to avoid using names, but let's just say McDonald's. Mm-hmm. If the card was redeemable at a McDonald's, the guy, person who holds the card doesn't care.
No.
They're kind of in many ways similar to one another. So I would have thought that the language captured it, but if it's not clear,
what I'm trying to make clear is for McDonald's to understand that they are in the scope of this and they have a financial liability, even though the card can be redeemed at a corporate-owned store.
Point taken. Sue?
I agree with the observations Bob made in terms of, I certainly would reach the same conclusions with those modifications to the fact patterns. I agree that because we set out the question that was answered, it sort of reads narrowly in the first instance, but do you not take any comfort from from the second to last paragraph, which sort of sets out why the conclusion was reached? Because, you know, the thing that's highlighted there is this unconditional obligation to deliver cash as being the sort of key reason for reaching the conclusion. So I completely understand what you're saying. Maybe people inadvertently read it as a narrow scope because of the fact pattern, but I guess what this, in the staff's defence, what they were probably trying to do was to set out what the rationale was for the decision, so it sort of doesn't limit the thinking. But I don't know whether there's a better way of presenting that to address Bob's concern.
Reinhardt?
I agree with limiting the scope to the prepaid card scenario and not scoping into FRIC 13 because I think, as the staff's paper showed, it depends on the specific facts and circumstances of the award program as to whether the liability is a financial liability or there's a component that's a financial liability. So I agree with restricting it to the prepaid cards. Similar to what Bob was saying, I think it's not only banks that have this issue, it's other entities that issue these types of cards, and we certainly see that more commonly in the North American context that it's other entities besides banks. But what I thought was missing in terms of the definition of scope, which is, I think, a critical feature driving the financial liability component, is that in this fact pattern as we describe it here, the bank, they have an obligation to pay the merchant when the card holder uses the prepaid card. And that feature seems to be missing from the description of the facts here, and I think it's important to highlight that because that's what drives the financial liability classification.
Bruce?
Thanks. To start off with, I agree with the conclusions, and I think on a number of the points being made. I guess the thing that I didn't agree with was I wasn't convinced by the argument that we shouldn't address this through a narrow scope amendment or something else. And the reason I do that is To start off with, I think I come back to the same comment that was made. This is not a banking issue. This is widespread. So I'm just, I can't remember what the outreach was like, but are we, did we just ask people about banks? Because if we did, then well, the conclusion, it isn't widespread. But I mean, my recollection is, I mean, my experience has been that this is wider than just banks. So I think that we could find a lot more people scoped in. Secondly, you know, we've taken decisions that we're not scoping in things like IFRIC 13, which I agree with, but I think that's a definite decision that we need to give guidance on. And if you look at paragraph 46, it talks about the reasons why we didn't issue the narrow scope amendment. The two reasons given were, firstly, we're saying the unintended consequences on other financial instrument accounting. Well, we kind of all know that whether it's an AD or not, that's going to happen if we believe that that's an issue. And the second was just purely on the widespread issue. And I mean, we've already heard this is a big enough issue in the US that an amendment's been passed. Other parts of North America, you know, this is an issue. I just get NFS, and already the comments have been made, this isn't just banking. I just get very concerned that we're making a pretty big statement through an AD on this. And maybe it's just that, whereas I agree with the conclusion, we need to just extend that outside of banks, and maybe this is a narrow scope amendment.
Yeah, I had highlighted that sentence. I'm always troubled when we make observations about widespread. If you have a lot of these in your jurisdiction, you don't really care if anybody else does it. It's an issue for you.
What is he referring to?
The amendment that the FASB EITF proposed that would allow a breakage.
I don't know.
I'm not saying that exact amendment.
I thought that was.
No. I'm saying similar to the fact. Yep. Yeah, I'm saying similar fact that this type of issue has been addressed there. And it was done through an amendment. I'm saying we should be doing the same. I don't think we should just be doing this purely through an agenda decision.
But Bruce, what would be the amendment that you would like to see?
I guess maybe it's just more clarity. Maybe we can, whether it's through an interpretation, whether it's through, maybe it is more of an interpretive issue than an amendment to the standard.
So you'd be looking for clarification, not changing the requirements of the accounting, is that right?
No. So actually, right, maybe this is probably more of an interpretation than a... I just get concerned. We spent a lot of time discussing this. People have come with various fact patterns. People are coming continually with issues on it. And yet, we're kind of all restricting this down to one agenda decision. And I just think that this is...
I'm still confused, because I thought you were referring to an amendment like the FASB have made, or
like
the EITF have proposed, and they've actually proposed to change their literature rather than interpret the literature.
And I accept that. Sorry, what I was saying is...
I'm just not sure what you're asking.
No, what I'm saying is that where they addressed the similar issue, they felt they had to go and change it. So I'm saying that, you know, the clarity there wasn't as clear either. I'm saying we're addressing the same issue, and we're saying, well, it's not that big an issue, so we'll just push
out. I'm not sure they thought it was unclear, but they thought that maybe the accounting deserved to be modified.
Okay.
Bob's a co-perpetrator here. So.
It was a bit unclear in the U.S. because while we had similar literature that said you don't derecognize financial liabilities until they're extinguished, we also had an SEC speech that said, hey, for these type of programs, you can include breakage. So we had a little bit of a... And I know that some people in our IFRS do analogize to that SEC speech. The other reason... we thought yes, we could have reached an interpretation that said, and not issued anything, and just said, yes, you have to derecognize when it's extinguished, not any time sooner. But we thought in the EITF, we thought that a better answer in our context was to allow for breakage.
So the amendment was not to clarify whether it was a financial liability. The amendment was to change and allow for breakage.
Yes, but there was the SEC that kind of created confusion about, right, for financial liability, could you include breakage?
I think
Kumar wants to speak in defense of IFRS 9.
Yeah. No, that would be a first ring. No, I wouldn't do that. Just to clarify, I think what the under IFRS, when I look at it, Bruce, the question was, is primarily if you conclude it's a financial liability, then you will be taken down a particular path about the derecognition. I think the interpretation would be on the first part where the debate has been, whether once you conclude that, if you want to bring in breakage, I think we will have to amend IFRS 9 derecognition. I think that's the clarity. And in the US, I think the contradiction came up with the literature and the SEC, what I would be careful, Christmas speeches, which came out and gave that guidance. I'm not sure how far under IFRS we will go to that and the interpretation. So it is a clear, I would say, amendment requirement to IFRS 9 derecognition requirements for financial liabilities to bring in breakage if you, if the first part is this is a financial liability.
Okay, let's get some other folks in here. Andrew, Bonnie, Charlotte, Tony. Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with the analysis on this one. I support clarifying the scope along the manner that Bob suggested. I think it might be helpful to say a bit more explicitly why this isn't actually in the scope of IFRS 15 or IFRIC 13. Basically, it's not part of a transaction with a customer. I mean, there is still this question out there of points or gift cards that can be redeemed either at the issuer or at third parties. But I think the paper talks about determining who has primary responsibility. But that's not an easy thing to do. There isn't much guidance on how you actually make that assessment. But in this narrow fact pattern, I think this is a financial liability, and arguments for a non-financial liability view would have some difficult consequences. On the breakage point, I don't quite see the justification of applying breakage to this fact pattern and not to dormant bank accounts and that sort of thing.
Okay, let's just be directional here. Bonnie, Jung-Soo, and on. Bonnie?
I agree that it is a financial liability. I think the issue I have is with breakage for having a liability on your books for forever. I also think that this could drive business decisions, and I generally disagree with accounting driving business decisions and changing no expiry date to having an expiry date, because you then have a liability if you're not forever, if you're not able to account for breakage for things like this. So I agree with what the ITF did. Maybe it's not for the exact same reasons, but I think it's a bit troubling that you have a liability on your books for forever.
Kung-Soo?
Actually, I have the same issue as she has. Actually, first of all, in Korea, we don't have any cards like this, so that this is not an issue of Korea. But I have a concern about not allowing breakage also. If you think about the substance of itself, there will be breakage. But the company has to maintain it forever because this is a financial liability. So agree with the staff's conclusion that this is the financial liability. I have no objection about that. But for the breakage, I think we have to think about that for a while.
Cheryl?
I agree with the agenda decision as it's written. I wouldn't have it narrowed to banks, because it would become industry specific, which seems quite odd. But I think we sort of avoided the bigger issue, which is the customer loyalty schemes, and when are those considered financial liabilities and when aren't they. And I would have concern about some of the sort of explanations in the paper about sort of primary responsibility, which just seem to be bringing a whole different concept into analysing a liability. So I would actually bring those onto the agenda and discuss those. Sorry, Sue.
I'm not clear what you just
suggested. I think we need to actually have an agenda decision or discuss customer loyalty schemes, because I think that's where we've had all the discussions in the past. That's where the greyness, that's where the conflict between the revenue recognition breakage model and IFRS 9, IFRS 13 comes. This one, I don't think there was any questions. It was very clearly a financial liability, and once you're in financial liability, it's clear what the answer is, even if people don't like it. Well, the customer loyalty seemed to have gone down a different route, and nobody's reconciled the two, because we've all looked at it and gone, oh, they don't reconcile, let's not do that.
Carl?
I think to allow or not breakage in this situation, it's much more financial system regulation than conceptual accounting discussion. I think it's clearly a financial liability until we will be able to get rid of this through financial regulation, for example.
Tony, before you come in, maybe you can answer a question that occurred to me. In my experience, there is no such thing as a perpetual liability, because there's a process in the States called a sheet or S-cheat, in which when a financial liability reaches a certain age, the state gets it. And so the state, pardon me?
These are exempt.
These are exempt from SG? Okay, well, that. Okay. Tony, go ahead anyway.
So I guess it won't surprise anybody that I'm troubled by a couple of aspects of it, given our previous discussions. Understand the conclusion that it's a financial liability. I guess where I what probably troubles me is a couple of pieces in the paper. I think the way that it tries to distinguish between loyalty cards and these things misses the point. I think the key difference is that with a loyalty scheme, it's a multiple element arrangement.
It's
a multiple element arrangement. So there is a sale transaction at the same time the points are issued. That's the key difference. And the thing that probably troubles me more than anything is to say, well, if you're in a situation in which I sell you something, I issue you some loyalty points, you're going to cash your points in with Sue. This paper seems to me to imply that that would be a financial liability because I can no longer avoid paying Sue cash when she redeems it.
Yes.
Now, IFRIC 13 is explicit and doesn't distinguish between plans that are satisfied by the company and satisfied by a third party. It says, the consideration allocated to the award credit shall be measured by reference to their fair value. And it tells you that fair value takes into account breakage. And then AG3 says, in that situation, you could measure it by reference to what will be paid to Sue, in my example. It doesn't say you have to. And so I think IFRIC 13 gives you a different answer. And probably unlike Charlotte, I'd be inclined to leave it because that's the established accounting for loyalty points. And so given that everybody, I think, is comfortable this is a financial liability, what I'd quite like to do is just be specific in the agenda decision that none of this gets carried over into loyalty point accounting for things that are in the scope of IFRIC 13, because I think IFRIC 13 just gives you a different answer.
Can I just say, I think, Tony, there is a way that you can read IFRIC 13 that gives you this different answer. I think there is also a way can read it that gives you an answer that would be consistent with the IFRS 13 requirements to measure the liability at redemption amount.
I agree that you could.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. My concern is that taking the staff paper together with the agenda decision, some folks might think that's the only way of doing it. And IFRIC 13 would certainly allow you to get to a different answer.
Well, I think it perhaps raises the question that if there are two ways of interpreting one piece of literature, one of which is inconsistent with another piece of literature, which would also seem to be on point, then which of those two interpretations should one take?
I would take the one that best reflects the economics, which is that breakage is going to happen. Gives users far more useful information than putting a liability on the books until the end of time.
Pablo?
Just a couple of arguments, personal thoughts with my banking regulators cap on. First argument would be more legalistic, and the second one more accounting. When we analyze these kind of schemes, we have to consider this kind of prepaid cards are becoming a frequent and generalized mediums of payment. And in that sense, their recognition should reflect that for similar mediums of payment, like, for instance, debit cards. So what does the issuer of the debit card, the bank that issues that debit card, do when the cardholder uses that card? It just debits the cardholder's current account. And this is just one of the ways of making use of that current account, similar to a transfer or a check or a cash withdrawal. So legally, that current account is a demand deposit. So maybe that could be added to the arguments in favor of the financial liability treatment. In the same way, the storage of an amount in a prepaid card is a demand deposit, and that is so independently whether the constitution of that deposit stems from a previous current account of the cardholder or is offered separately. So what that means legalistically is that, or one of the implications is that when you consider both parties of the financial instrument, you have the bank on one side, and I'm just referring to the situation where a bank issues that card. One party is the bank, and the other party is the retailer, and that's important to be considered. It's not the card holder that stands on the other side of the financial instrument of the financial contract, but rather the retailer. For the card holder, the this contract would be just, as I said, a way of making use of that facility to withdraw cash or make the payment. So when you consider that, when you consider that the parties to the transaction are the bank on the one side and the retailer, the merchant on the other side, you could assimilate this, and this is the accounting argument, you could assimilate this to paragraph 25 in IAS 32, which says that a financial instrument may require the entity to deliver cash or another financial asset in the event of the occurrence or non-occurrence of uncertain future events that are beyond the control of both the issuer and the holder of the instrument. So in this case, this would mean that the bank should recognize the financial liability because the contract forces the bank to deliver cash to the merchant depending on the outcome of an uncertain event, which is the cardholder making use or not making use of the card. So just to point out that those two arguments may be used. As regards breakage, if you consider this as a demand deposit, just the same way as any other, like for instance, like any other debit card, breakage would go into the same analysis like any other demand deposit for the stickiness of, I think it was Andrew mentioning that before, there's a stickiness in all in the whole of the amount of the demand deposits, and the breakage would be considered within that stickiness. No. I mean that would be a banking regulation. It would be something that a purchaser of a bank would consider when acquiring a bank. No, that's. Absolutely, but I mean, when you consider breakage, that's something that you would consider in valuing the bank.
Yeah, but not in the way that we measure demand deposits, and I guess that's one of the key things we're analogizing to. Yeah.
Question for Kumar, who wants to come in anyway. I recall the discussions around this issue back in the 2003 cycle of amendments to IAS 39. And
on demand deposits, we mean.
On whether you could have any measurement other than
amount
payable on demand. And I think that the board was pretty clear among the board members at that point in saying, no. And I didn't participate in subsequent discussions around 9. Were there any?
No, because we've carried over the fair value concept in 13.
The paragraph has been carried over from IS 39 to IFRS 13 because that's where it should be. It's a fair valuation concept where it sits now because we put everything together. And I think there was very conscious that this is not broken because that's the whole essence of the macro hedging project on demand deposits where you consider what Pablo was talking about, behavioralization, and you change the contractual into what would be a behavioralized to consider stickiness. So if we look at amending this, it has got a significant amount of consequences because you start moving away from contractual, and based on behavior, you can have gain or loss patterns coming in and a lot of other interest exposure. So that was clearly not something that was intended, and that's why the paragraph was moved in toto 213.
Okay. Maybe if I could just add to that, as is already actually alluded to in the paper in paragraph 8, there were some informal discussions with small group meetings with board members about this particular fact pattern, and at least based on the meeting I was involved in, it was exactly the sorts of points that Kumar raised that were raised by the board members in the meeting that I was in, at least, others might have different views, but a reservation about how and why we would treat this obligation so differently to how we think about other financial liabilities, even though we discussed what the EITF were proposing, a sort of concern about how it could be scoped and why we should think about this type of liability in such a fundamentally different way to others. So for those who are keen to look at an amendment, I think it's worth at least being aware of that.
I think in response to something Pablo told us, that I hadn't thought about. I had been thinking about these things in terms of discrete transactions. So I go out and I buy a $100 card from McDonald's. May McDonald's forgive me. What Pablo is saying is these could be recharged. So this is just a hand, it's almost, then it becomes almost like my debit card I have on Barclays. And I hadn't thought about it in that context, which makes Sue's point all the more difficult. John, Reinhardt, and Bob.
I mean, I think the obligation is a financial liability, and I agree with not taking breakage into account. I didn't find the assessment of the loyalty programs entirely convincing. It seemed to be sort of introducing some concepts of retaining control and primary obligation for determining whether you had a financial or non-financial liability. I agree with Tony. I just think that the gender rejection decision should stay away from things which are in the scope of revenue transactions and just deal with these as transactions to acquire the card. I think if you start to make an exception for this in bringing or were considering an amendment to bring breakage into account, I don't know where you would stop. I mean, where do you know, traveler's checks, you know, bank accounts, etc. So I just think you can't go there without much more fundamental review of financial liability derecognition.
Reinhardt?
I would agree with the comments that were made in terms of the derecognition, and if there's an exception or exemption for this, then it would have much broader scope. I mean, I think it's fair to say that the bank, the way they make money is on breakage. So if we wanted to reflect economics, that would be the economics. But that's in conflict with IS 32. That's the problem. The one thing that I thought of that is perhaps different from a deposit liability is, at least in the programs that we typically see, and if you think about why wouldn't a person use their debit, or sorry, use a prepaid card, well, quite often it's because they've lost it. And that's different from a demand deposit in the sense that the bank has they know what the obligation is. Now here, if you've lost it, I guess the question, if we wanted to, could we explore whether that gives some rise to some derecognition because you've lost your claim to it? I'm not really proposing that, but I'm just saying there is some, at least in my mind, there is some difference there between your demand deposit scenario and a prepaid card.
I recall when we did the traveler's checks case in the early conceptual framework discussions, it was how many of them wind up at the bottom of drawers. Bob?
I just want to come back a bit on the IFRIC 13 discussion and that how to deal with breakage is clear, because I'm not sure it is. It is clear that you consider breakage in the initial measurement, but let's say I give out 10 credits to 10 customers, $10 each, and I know that my estimate is that 9 of them will come back, 1 will not. I think initial measurement, it's clear that's $90 I would recognize. I think what's unclear then is the subsequent unit of account. Because if I then look at, okay, well, these 10 credits are now worth 9 each, and 9 come in and redeem them, I'm still left with $9 that'll be on my books perpetually. If I deem it as, well, this is a unit, the account is a pool, I can see how you can get to, Tony, the answer that you were getting to. But I want to observe, I just don't think it's real clear in 13. Not that I'm trying to open a can of worms and trying to bring this back into this issue. I'm satisfied keeping loyalty programs out. I just still think it's not that clear on breakage is dealt with in subsequent measurement and derecognition in 13.
Other comments? Okay, Michael, where do we go?
Okay, well, I would say we should ask if we've got a support for publishing this tentative agenda decision. There were a few comments about tightening up the scope, the first of which was to delete reference to banks because it wouldn't just apply to banks. And then I think it was Bob had a couple of other suggestions to think about in terms of the A to E, about whether there should be any tightening of those.
I would also propose that we take out the observation about not widespread. Several people here have said that this issue is significant within jurisdictions. There may be only five of those, but for those five, it's significant. So I would propose that we delete that sentence. Okay. Tony?
I would support going ahead with it based on the discussion. Maybe a question to everybody else. Do you think we need to be explicit this does not apply to loyalty plans? I would prefer to be explicit so that people don't end up confused, okay, given all the discussions that we've had.
I think given the discussions, that's a fair point. We'll add that.
That's my concern. That's my concern.
You clearly can if there are multiple element transactions.
I think you can based on this discussion. I think there are some loyalty plans. I don't think anybody looks at them that way because they follow IFRIC 13. But I think this has been my concern all along, that reaching this conclusion would get you to the same place in the very simple loyalty plan where I've sold you the goods and I've given you loyalty points, that will be cashed in with a third party. I think if you follow this conclusion, then you would conclude that it is a financial liability. But at the moment, people would account for it under IFRIC 13 or IFRS 15.
The scope of IFRIC 13 is loyalty points arising from sales transactions. Yeah. So I think if you word this to say it doesn't apply in situations where it's sales transactions, I don't think you cashed in with IFRIC, the scope of IFRIC 13.
Yeah.
I think we need to make that clear, though.
Yeah.
And then probably also change the way you may modify your points. For example, only then for flights and not going to merchandisings and so on, and then buy in things there. That's also different to this bank cards.
Trying to catch Kumar Emanuel's eyes. Is that all right?
We've got to understand, because what I would be concerned about is that one of the questions we already got on when this was being discussed, like, can a bank then issue a prepaid card, which we expect this to be normally financial liabilities, and put it in these words and get away from financial liability? Because I did get a question in from a structurer saying that, can I then start recognizing gains and losses on basically demand deposits? That would be my concern.
Now I think what we're not saying is that the conclusions reached in this would not apply to customer loyalty programs. What I think we would be saying is that this particular fact pattern was not a customer loyalty program, so that this conclusion was being applied to a straight sale of a prepaid card.
Better to me, but just a blanket, if you can get a loyalty card label on it, you don't have to worry about IS32 anymore. It sounds like a dangerous thing to decide on the fly.
Having said, the reason my concern comes in is that I'm going to here override a major valuation paragraph in 13 for demand deposits, which has a lot of knock-on implications on how you do these things. So if you can avoid that, that's what worries me, like if you get it out of financial liabilities. The other scoping, what you proposed, that's more direct, but if somebody, the other thing I would have more concern with that wording. So what we are scoping in, what you're saying, that it's not a financial liability?
Now what we're scoping in is saying it is a financial liability.
For these things.
For these things.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about anything else.
Yeah. I think that's better.
The approach that
yeah.
Michael proposed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more specific to this fact pattern and doesn't bring other things in.
I thought Tony was saying let's specifically exclude customer loyalty, which to me would mean that people, maybe I've more experienced the stretches, that people would say so they're trying to scope themselves into that, so they were out of 32 and IFRS 13. It's effectively saying IFRIC 13 trumps IFRS 13, which is.
And I don't think we ever want to do that.
No. That wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just don't want
if
people
we do it around the other way, I think
thinking they have to.
Yep. I think they have to look at the issues in that in the agenda decision anyway, but they should be looking at those by looking at 32, 39, IFRS 9 and 13.
Yeah.
Okay. Andrew wants to come in. Ton wants to come in. Ton, we'll start with you.
Thank you. Yes, as securities regulators, we are a little bit concerned by saying, okay, we are scoping it very narrowly because there are a lot of fact patterns where you have certain elements from what is here in the fact pattern presented, and that raises the question, how have I account for these things? They have to decide, is it a financial liability or not? And if it is a financial liability and it is also in IFRIC 13, what should they do with the accounting after the initial recognition? So we are a little bit afraid that the guidance will not be that helpful. It will only be helpful for this specific fact pattern. And it will raise lots of questions for others. And I have the feeling that that is what come up from the discussion today. So I'm not sure that it is the right way to go forward by narrowing the scope and leaving practice with a lot of questions. Thank you.
13, IFRIC 13 was incorporated in IFRS 15, am I correct?
That's right, yes.
Okay, Andrew, last call.
I do think we need to make it clear that we are not discussing customer loyalty schemes. I agree with the way Sue articulated that, so that we just didn't cover those. I think if we did want to try and broaden it out to where you draw the line between IFRS 9 and IFRS 15, that's again a bigger exercise. There are clearly situations where IFRS 15 overrides the financial liability definition. It's not just loyalty programs, you know, goods sold with a right of return. We apply the breakage guidance. We don't treat that right of return as a financial liability, I don't think, in the books of the vendor. So I think we just need to keep it narrow and stay away from things that are in the scope of the revenue guidance.
And I think it would be most useful to describe it in those terms. This is not a revenue transaction. And if you're going through revenue transactions, you're going to follow a different path, and this isn't it. Philippe?
Yeah. But if we exclude banks, it would mean that the population of entities in the scope would be very broad. So I think we need clearly to scope this general decision by saying that the card can be used only at merchants other than the issuer of the card, not the issuer itself. I can think of oil companies that issue cards for buying oil that you can use at a gas station, either that belongs to the oil company or that is an independent network with the same logo. So in that case, if you use it at an independent merchant with the logo, it is a third party. It's a three-party transaction, which falls in this case. But if you use it at a gas station that belongs to the oil company, it is a revenue transaction, right? Because you have prepaid your oil that you buy from that company. Then you are under revenue, I guess.
I thought we went exactly the opposite.
Well, I'm asking that.
That's my McDonald's example.
So if you prepay a card with the oil company, it is a financial liability. Is it not an unexecuted contract under 15? Isn't it a contract liability under 15? Or I'm not quite sure why it's not a IFRS 15 contract liability.
The revenue
because
comes.
You cannot redeem for cash, okay? You can only redeem for oil with either that company or an independent affiliate. So why isn't 15 if it is only?
Sue? I'm sorry, I thought you wanted to come in.
You do have an unconditional obligation to pay cash.
Mm-hmm.
You do. You do, because they could go to another supplier, and then you've got it.
for part of it.
Yes.
Maybe, I don't know, at the moment I issue the card, I get 100 deposit on the card from this customer, he may spend it with me. In that case, and I cannot redeem for cash. In that case, I can only provide all. I guess I'm in 15 if he uses with me. If he goes to see one of my affiliates, independent retailer, I have to pay back cash with this. Then it is financial liability under this, which is okay. So when the customer can use it either with me or with my affiliate, is it a measurement issue? Part of that could be 15, part could be...
Which is a 15 scope issue, which I can't answer off the top of my head, but I'm just reacting to the liability part, which is an example that Bob raised at the start, that if you are one of the merchants that could be approached, but there's others that you can't stop them going to, which gives you an obligation to pay cash, prima facie that meets the definition of a financial liability.
I would have thought that the revenue transaction occurs when the redemption occurs. So the customer says... Customer is indifferent about who gets the hamburger, but the revenue transaction comes when the customer presents for redemption, doesn't it?
Under 15, if my customer pays in advance, I don't book revenue. I book a contract liability, so I book revenue when the oil is put in his tank, whoever puts the oil in his tank.
Yeah. So we're in
raging agreement. The question is whether in between it is a financial liability or a contract liability under IFRS 15. That's my point.
Okay. I think we've had several proposals that the staff has been diligently noting for how to rework this, all of which are consistent, in my view, with the basic thrust of the agenda decision, which is that for this population, as defined and to be fine-tuned, their financial liabilities and the financial liability guidance applies. You'll all see the revised wording, but based on what I just articulated, who would support that decision?
Thirteen.
Okay. Done and done. And amazingly, it's time to stop for lunch. So, Junior, do you have everything you need? Okay, that's it.